Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday. And our guest this hour is Nikki Giovanni. She has a new book of poems. Bicycles is the title of the book, Love Poems. And Nikki Giovanni has been writing wonderful poems for a long time now. She is University Distinguished Professor of English at Virginia Tech and wrote a famous poem that was widely distributed as a source of trying to make sense, if you can make sense, of the horrible killings at Virginia Tech. And she has written a lot of books, including Black Feeling, Black Talk, Black Judgment. Her new book that I made reference to is a companion to her 1997 Love Poems. Nikki has received all kinds of honorary degrees from colleges and universities. She has been honored by the governors of Virginia and Tennessee for her achievements in the arts and humanities. She has keys to cities all over the country. She was the first recipient and actually was a good friend. I will ask her about this, of Rosa Parks, and the medal is the Woman of Courage Awards. She also holds the Langston Hughes Medal for Outstanding Poetry. And I'm just doing, you know, a little tenth of her biography, perhaps. Our phone number for you to join our conversation with Nikki Giovanni is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Nikki Giovanni, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm having a good morning.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I heard you do a poem, and I can't remember where I heard it, Nikki. It was on NPR, and it may have been the day of the inauguration, or it was right leading up to it. And it was a poem about Barack Obama, very short. Do you know what that is? I can't, you know, I was looking for it, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
Well, you can't. I mean, I did it for NPR because I had so many friends. I have not been doing anything with this election because, you know, there are so many people to do so many things, and I'm thrilled that we have a Democrat in the White House, but I didn't want to just jump in because, you know, the wheel has not been invented, and we already know how to slice bread. But you know, I mean, I'm thrilled, but I just didn't want to be, you know, like everybody else. But then my good friends at NPR said, you know, Nikki, you know, why don't you, you know, you must have some idea. And I was like, yeah, because I love the Hip Hop Nation, and of course, if there's anything that we know now, it's that the Hip Hop Nation has created a president. Mm. So I wanted to do a rap, and that's what I did. And the only place it is on NPR. You know?
All right, I need to look there to find it. Then I liked it
because it's not published or anything, and we just I had fun with it. You know.
Yeah. And what do you mean when you say the Hip Hop Nation helped elect this president? How so?
Starting with the young people. Period. First of all, Hip Hop Nation is international, it's powerful. It is the sound not only of America, but the sound of planet Earth right now. And the kids were like, we need something new. We need something to believe in. So as they became acquainted with Barack, as he was beginning to start his campaign, you know, it's Willie Young and the people that started to put things out there, that the Hip Hop Nation, you know, made videos, they made CDs, they did downloading, they do Facebook, all the kind of things that old ladies like me don't really understand. You know, I register and vote, you know, but they did it. They had money. They helped raise funds, and I think also as a group, the Hip Hop Nation is the first non-racial. They are. It's a black sound, and it's an urban sound, but they are not. Their idea of color is very different from, say, little old ladies like me who grew up in segregation. And even when we got to a desegregated point, these kids live in an integrated world. Mm-hmm. And so I think all of that came together.
Mm-hmm. I don't think of you as a little old lady, and I don't think you think of yourself that way either, do you?
Yeah, actually, I'm 65. That qualifies for little old lady. I was over in Chicago 2 weeks ago when they had that awful 25 degree below zero.
Oh yeah,
and they were saying, you know, and older people should stay inside. And I'm thinking like, oh, I hope the older people are going to be all right. And then I thought, no, wait a minute, I'm one of the older people.
But your poems in this book don't reflect an older person at all, do they? I mean, you're a vigorous young woman in these poems.
Oh, I love it. I, you know. whatever else it is, love is always just a good idea. And there were a couple of just real tragedies that just broke your heart. I mean, I've been at Virginia Tech 22 years. I love it here. I'm extremely happy. And we took a couple of really bad hits. And you're just hoping we can find a way to work through it. But I also had some personal. My mom and my sister both died within 6 weeks of each other. Mm. And then my aunt died, and then Rosa died. So all of a sudden, I went from being the baby in the family, which I was, to being an elder. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it all of that sort of hit you. And then I was incredibly sad. There has to be a better word, but I don't know it. I was incredibly sad. It just seemed like, you know, I don't despair particularly. I mean, it's very seldom that I reach that point, but it was just like, oh, wow, how do we get through this? Well, you're a writer. I mean, if I had been a tennis player, I would have, you know, gone on the circuit and just kept playing tennis. I would have just done what Serena and Venus did when their sister was murdered, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. If I was a painter, I probably would have painted or sculpted or, you know, right. But I'm a writer. And so I just got my laptop and said, okay, let's write through this. But, you know, you write your way into and out of moods. And so it was just like, okay, I do. I mean, falling in love is wonderful. And so what you end up doing I'm not too old to fall in love, by the way. But, you know, you're recalling some things and you're longing for some things. And so I just let that happen in the book. I love the book. The book makes me smile.
Good. It made me smile, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does. And you talk about your mom, and you were by her bedside. It's interesting. You didn't want her, I think it's in one of the poems, yeah, isn't it? You didn't want her to see your sadness. So she'd wake up as she was dying and you were, yeah, crying, and you thought, I can't do this to my mom. I got to be strong here.
Yeah. I think any of your listeners who've lost, you know, their mother particularly, mm-hmm, or a spouse, you have to, you know, Randy's Pouch did that wonderful, the last lecture. You have to kind of give permission. You have to say, all right, you know, I'm going to be all right. It's all what you're doing. You know, they're doing the heavy lifting. And so you don't want them, mm-hmm, to open every time they open their eyes, there you are. So I just wanted her to know, well, I'm going to be okay, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be happy, because I'd rather, of course, and I'd rather have her. But it's always better that I would bury her than she I.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
right,
you know, you have these kind of things, but I just kept saying to myself, you know, you gotta do better than just sitting here, because I knew that my sister was dying, mm, as she had a brain tumor that had metastasized. So that was what was going to happen there. And so I thought, well, she's going to count on me to get everything done, and you only get one time to do these things right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right.
Writing, you know, just sitting there propped up. I actually ended up one putting my feet on her bed, you know, because mommy was really well until she died. I mean, she was not like sick or something. Mm-hmm. She went into hospital on June 8th and she died on 24th.
Mm.
So it was just a shutdown. And I still believe, I said to somebody recently, you know, I hope that I go to heaven. I can't wait, though, because I know that they did. And I really, even if I don't go to heaven, I'm going to get a visit. I'm going to get a pass, you know. And I'm going to say, you guys did the same thing you've been doing all my life, because they would, Gary's my older sister, and Mommy and Gary, you know, in the summer, you know, they'd go to bed, and then Mommy would come in and get Gary. And, you know, she sleep, which means me, and Gary would say, yes, she sleep. Well, I was never asleep. I still don't sleep well at night. And then they'd go out and get, like, barbecue to fry fish or something like that. And they did that all my life, you know. And I thought, okay, that's what's going on here. Mommy's getting ready. She's going to go to heaven. Then she's going to call Gary, and it's going to be like, Nick will be okay.
I was struck, and you wrote about this in two of the poems, the transition that you fake. One of the poems is about, you know, these wonderful, happy, filled with food, and your relatives getting together for Thanksgiving, I think it was. And then a later one in which you talk about being with your only living relative. I thought your family, I mean, we find family in different places, right? But your family was quite different.
Yeah, we were always small, and then to lose, but we, you know, as we did, we lost, yeah, three people very quickly. So, yeah, that became very, you know, it's a very sad thing, but you have to find the joy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of joy. So you use like the love poems to work your way out of their unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have to.
I'm a big fan of joy, too. I don't think I've ever heard it said that way before. I'll use that again, Nikki. I'm a big fan of joy. How did you became very good friends with Rosa Parks.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to talk about Nina Simone, too. God, I've loved Nina Simone for years. How did you meet Rosa Parks? Tell me that story.
It does not put me, I think, in my better light. But I met Mrs. Parks because it was raining. It was a downpouring kind of day, not just, you know, spring rain, but really raining. And I was in Philadelphia, as was she. I didn't know that. But in the old Philadelphia terminal, it was like, until they built the new one, it was like a trailer. And so everybody who was going to be traveling on, you know, like the express, right? And so I went in, and it was early in the morning, and if it's one skill I have, I really can go through almost any airport half asleep. And I walked in, and I wasn't, you know, really waking up because I knew we weren't going anyplace because I could see, you know, the weather. And I like to have my back to the wall, so I was going to go back to sleep. And I found a place on the other side of the room and sat down and said to myself, my God, that woman looks so much like Rosa Parks, doesn't she? But I wear glasses, of course, and I thought, get your glasses out. And I put my glasses on. It's like, my God, that's Rosa Parks. And she was sitting there with who I later found out was Elaine Steele. But on the other side, on her right was Elaine, but on the other side was just a regular, for lack of a better word, with no disrespect, just a regular white guy. And I thought, my God, somebody has to move, and I knew I couldn't move Elaine. So it's just like, oh, how do I get this man to move? And, you know, sometimes you say, you know, sir, excuse me, you're sitting next to a cultural icon, and I'd like to have your seat, please. But then he might say, oh, my God, I want to, you know, keep it. So I did a thing we in the black community called Bogarting. And I just walked up on him, you know, and just stood right. I mean, I'm in his space totally. And he looked up, and I said, you going to move or what? And he said, oh, I'm sorry, miss, I'm sorry, because I caught him off guard. And I said, Miss Parks, it's Nikki Giovanni, I'm a poet. And she smiled, you know, she had that, I mean, the sun just came into that room. And she said, oh, baby, black love is black wealth, which is a line from my poem, Nikki Russell. And I was like, oh, no, Nikki, Rosa Parks has read me. I was thrilled. So we talked. As far as I was concerned, you know, a hurricane could have come. And we exchanged numbers, and, you know, a lot of times you meet famous people, and they say, oh, give me a call or whatever, and they don't, and you don't, you know, and I thought, well, okay, I'm going to give you a call because I'm going to be, like, in Detroit, you know, she lived in Detroit, and so I was in and out, and it's like, okay, and it's wonderful because every time talking to her is always, it's always a pleasure. Mm-hmm. Always.
Yeah. Oh, that's a wonderful story. Let's go back to a horrific story. I guess life is like that at times. How is Virginia Tech now? I know you had this student in your class, and I believe that you even said that you were going to resign if it would get him, you know, out. You know that
I couldn't teach him anymore.
Yeah, you knew what was going on with this guy.
I don't know what I. What a time. You know, to be honest. I'm a proud Hokie and a proud daughter of Virginia Tech, and that still there are still loose ends on this situation. I just knew that I couldn't continue this journey with this student, and I never had that feeling, you know, in all my years here. And I think that we did the best that we could with it, you know. But I don't think that I get any special dibs on. I mean, if I had known something, I surely would have shared it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you wound up really comforting so many people. It was the voice of the poet. It was your voice that people were looking to.
I think that, again, I think I was just really fortunate that poetry did not let us down. The poetry came through. And I didn't have any time. The president and secretary called me and said, we'd like for you to anchor convocation, which is the first I knew of convocation. And the answer to that is yes, because the place that you work and that you love is hurting. But, you know, you have no way of knowing. I mean, we were talking like 12 hours because convocation was supposed to be at 10 o'clock that morning. But the governor was trying to get back. You remember Bush sent his plane. And so we couldn't get the governor in until around noon. And so we pushed it back. But by the time when I woke up the next morning, I wrote it. When Kay asked me to do that, I just went and sat down again because you have to write what it is. But having no time, it means it's straight from your heart. And then when I got up the next morning, I thought, oh, this is not sufficient. I should try to write a great poem, but I'm not going to have great poem time. And I just thought, do it. You know, this is what you have. Go with it. Do it. Hmm. And I just I'm thankful that it was. It did what it did its job.
It sure did do its job.
Yeah.
And what are the loose ends you're dealing with now?
Well, you know, there are questions. I would say, you know, it would be. We can go online and see what the police department is saying. But they're just questions about what happened and who knew and what, you know, they're questions. And there are lawsuits that may be filed.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts everybody in an awkward position.
Right.
Yeah.
Nikki Giovanni is our guest this hour, and we're going to welcome phone calls for her. Her latest book is Bicycles, Love Poems. Nikki is a poet, an activist, a mother, a professor, three-time NAACP Image Award winner, first recipient of the Rosa Parks Woman of Courage Award, and also holds the Langston Hughes Medal for Outstanding Poetry. She has written 27 books and is a Grammy nominee for the Nikki Giovanni Poetry Collection. She has been many years a distinguished professor of English at Virginia Tech. So we go to phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is the number. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're happy to have Nikki Giovanni with us this hour, her book, Bicycles, Love Poems, and our number, 800-486-8655. Dick from Waukesha is with us. Hi, Dick.
Hi, Kathleen and Nikki. Is it Nikki or Nikki?
Nikki, with an N.
Yes, well, I have a quirky question to ask. What would have happened, what would you have done if when you walked over there to meet Mrs. Parks and looked at the man and said, are you going to move or what? He'd said no.
I don't know. Fortunately, he moved.
Oh, that's good.
That is good. Yeah. Thanks, Dick, very much for the call. Nina Simone. Let's talk about Nina Simone for a while. I used to do a Sunday morning inspirational show years ago on another radio station, and I played Nina Simone every single week, Nikki. Every single week I play her because that's what she was. She fit into that program so well.
Oh, yeah.
What a voice.
Well, Nina was, you know, was an old friend. And Andy Stroud, her husband, Andy taught my son to swim.
Ah.
And Lisa calls me Aunt Nikki. You know, we had children at the same age. So the kids played together. So I knew her forever and actually had begun working with her on her autobiography. But I'm not a good ghostwriter, and so that was not going to work out. But I was fortunate, and I've got about 20 hours worth of tape on our conversations. But Nina's a great woman. I mean, just a phenomenal voice. And, of course, you know, she was a classical pianist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really funny because, you know, you'd be talking to Nina and maybe talking about something that didn't particularly suit her to talk about. You know, you're trying to get a book done at this particular point. And she'd go over to the piano and just start, da-na-na-na. And that's, oh, so you don't want to talk about that right now. She was wonderful. There's a great story to be told for people who do biographies, like Paula Giddings, you know, just did that wonderful biography of Ida B. Wells. You'd love to see a good researcher. I'm really just a poet, and I mean that with no disrespect, but you have to finally realize what you can and can't do. And I would love to see somebody because, you know, Nina was mistreated by our government. Our government mistreated many, many people, but we tend to forget that they kind of ran her out of the country.
Tell me that story. How did that happen?
Oh, that happened because she was raising money for civil rights. And, you know, what they were saying is you got tax problems. And then they were, because she was raising money with her concerts, you remember Mississippi Goddamn, the kind of things that she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And FBI, you know, the FBI is the FBI. And under Hoover, they were terrible people. Look at what they tried to do to King.
Right.
But I don't think that people realize the pressure that Nina came under. And then they were trying to arrest her at one point on failure to pay income tax. And she had to go before the judge, and the judge happened to be Constance Baker Motley. And the government said, well, we want you to hold her. We don't want her to be released on her own recognizance. And Judge Motley said, you know, I'm not going to, you know, that's insane. And what she did was, of course, released Nina to her own recognizance. Nina just left the, this is in New York City, and just went up to Kennedy and flew to I think it was to Guinea. But, you know, she spent most of her life abroad until very recently. Hmm. And, of course, she's dead now. But I think she came home to see Lisa changed her name for her mother to Simone. She saw her in Aida. But, you know, she spent the rest of her life abroad. She was in right outside of Stuttgart. No, not Stuttgart. God, where's my brain? Kurt in Belgium. She had a home there, and of course she worked in Paris a lot. As you know, I mean she's an icon. And
right.
Nina
an icon.
Live at Ronnie Scott's. I mean, anytime she's going to be at Ronnie Scott's or anything, that's in London. So she worked abroad. It was our loss.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It was our loss for sure.
Yeah. You mentioned that you had children about the same time. That was something that significantly changed your life, didn't it? You said when you had your son, everything has changed. And I want you to talk more about that. Everything has changed. It does, doesn't it? Everything changes.
It does. I mean, I was watching, you know, Brad and Angelina, you know, and it's like, oh, my goodness, you know, my life takes on another kind of meaning. Somebody just had a child recently, and he was saying that now it's not. Ben Affleck was saying, you know, it's not about me anymore. It's about something else. I think children change, and I think they're nice. You know, children and puppies. I think I think they bring out whatever it is the best of us. Because again, it's a it's an unqualified love that they both offer, and I think anytime anybody loves you. You have these responsibilities to it. I wrote a poem a long time ago. I think it's in Cotton Candy on a rainy day that we're not responsible for the people we love. We're responsible for the people who love us.
Mm-hmm.
And people kind of forget that because you don't mind being responsible for the people you love. But you have to be careful who you let love you because all of a sudden, you know, you're not allowed to hurt them.
Right.
Yeah.
And is he, you know, I was trying to get some up-to-date information on him. Is he a lawyer in New York now?
My son?
Yeah.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, then he is. So I did find the right the right thing.
And, and he has a daughter.
Uh-huh.
And we've been laughing because, you know, Barack Obama never ceases to refer to his daughters as our precious daughters.
Hmm.
And so everybody's been laughing now. So every time you say to somebody, how is your child? Or something, how is your precious daughter? How is your precious granddaughter?
<Aww. laughs>
But, you know, I mean, you think about it. He always refers to his daughters as our precious daughter. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah. And so was it hard to let him fly? To have him, you know, leave the house and go off on his own?
No. I never did understand that. I was way ready. I mean, that's why God made teenagers. Because it's like, okay, time to go. And and you're proud of them. You've done your job. And life is about to me, this is me, Nikki, it's an ever-constant identification of who you are. And so at one point you're a child. At one point you're a daughter, for example, to your parents, to your mom.
Mm-hmm.
You reach another point that they used to take care of you. You become a caretaker. And all of these things work. You have children. Everybody, you have to keep moving, and you keep changing who it is that you are to whom you used to be. That's an awkward sentence. But you're never the same person to the same people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one thing that kills relationships because, you know, when you meet people and fall in love, for example, and have children, then that's one level. But if you don't change, 20 years later, you're going to be heading for either unhappiness or a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Because the need that you have for each other changes.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do together changes.
Mm-hmm.
And how you approach it. Did you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And I think that people, you know, I never did like that stupid song, Stay As Sweet As You Are, Don't Let A Thing Ever Change You. Something has to change you.
Mm-hmm.
Or as a song that I do love a lot says, everything must change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Change is absolutely, absolutely necessary. It's what we do.
You have one of the poems where you talk about, it's interesting what we do for people we love, or it's a simple poem about making sure that, and it's somebody that you would like to have fallen in love with, I think, or maybe eventually you did, I don't know. But you talk about the chair that was put beside your desk so that this person would know, would feel comfortable there. And
that's right.
And the little things we do for people we love, to have what they love or will make their life a little better around.
Well, you know, seductions change, because when we're young, we seduce because we are, you know, we are in good shape, we're thin, and, you know, we're bringing that kind of energy. But as we get, well, I mean, it's true, you know, because it's all on the eyes when we're young. Seduction is exactly a visual. But as we get older, which, and again, I so enjoy this book because people don't think of people in their 60s as falling in love and things like that, which, of course, we do. But it changes. What you do to seduce changes. So now you seduce with, you know, making soup for them or, you know, making sure that there's lotion in your office so that if he stops by, you know, you can say, oh, you know, your hands are cracking or whatever because everybody's hands are so cold because of this weather. You know, it's the little things you do. And it's all the same thing. It's all saying, you know, hey, notice me.
Right. Nikki Giovanni is our guest, and we welcome phone calls if you'd like to join the conversation. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Or our email is talk@WPR.org. I'm sure that many of you listening have been fans of hers for a number of years. She has written so many books and does such wonderful poetry. This latest book that we're talking about is Bicycles, Love Poems, and we certainly welcome your calls. Nikki, I want you to read, because I've loved hearing you read poetry for years now, and I don't, you know, I want to ask you to pick one. And I'd like to pick, you know, the whole book. I could just have you read the whole book all hour, which would be great. But do you have one that you can read for us that you really want to?
Absolutely. I'm flipping because we were talking about food.
Right.
Okay. This is called So Enchanted With You. I like boiled turnips, boiled potatoes, boiled rutabagas with butter and sea salt, but not every day. I like fried Virginia flounder, fried sand dabs, fried smelts, but usually only on Friday nights. I want drop biscuits, miniature Parker House rolls, extra thin white bread when I uncharacteristically make a sandwich. I like garlic straight off the vine, anchovies anytime, and good red wines because I'm too old to drink cheap. I like to pound and grill my veal. I rub my beef in a special chili mixture. I don't really eat anyone else's ground meat. In other words, I'm normal. So this is the question. Why am I so enchanted with you?
I like that.
I love it. It was a fun poem.
Yeah, it is. Let's go to Molly from Green Bay. Hello, Molly.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I am so pleased to hear Nikki Giovanni's voice.
Thank you.
Because she has been with me during much of my adult life. I loved her poetry always. And I was so glad that you were at Virginia Tech because you gave us a feeling of calm out here when you spoke that evening. But I really want to talk to you about the surprise I got when I bought a book for my grandchildren called Poetry Speaks to Children.
Ah, yes.
And whom should I find on page 44 but my wonderful Nikki Giovanni?
Thank you.
And I loved all three of those. The reason I like chocolate and trips and mummies. And how nice that you were just telling us about your mother.
Oh, well, thank you. Hmm. Yeah, that's a nice book. That's the book that led me into my book, which I edited. I was on the board of that, but I edited the book Hip Hop Speaks to Children. And I am so proud of that book. We went to number 3 on New York Times bestseller. And I'm really pleased because I was connecting the dots in hip hop. We were talking earlier about the Hip Hop Nation. But, you know, hip hop goes back to opera because they are both vernacular that takes place in public square. And I had begun to think some time ago that hip-hop is getting a bad reputation, that a couple of people doing, you know, rather salacious things is taking away the beauty of this sound. And I wanted something for parents to be able to say, you know, what is my kid listening to and why? So I thought we should give him a tool. And what I tried to do in Hip-Hop Speaks to Children is to trace it all the way back through opera, all the way up through the holiness preacher, all the way up through the blues, all the way up to signifying, all the way up to where we are today, and sort of let parents know that, well, yeah, you know, this is okay. You know, you can make decisions about which end of this experience you think is appropriate for your child. So I was very, very, very pleased for that book. I am very pleased for the book, and it's up for an Image Award, so I'm wishing it well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call, Molly. John from Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi, this is John. Nikki, I just wanted to tell you that I met you in 1973.
Ah.
the okay. mayor of Bay City, Michigan, gave me the Norton Anthology of Modern Poetry, and that's when I met you.
Ah, okay.
Huh. And so I just wanted to call to thank you for having such a normal, helpful voice, at least for me.
Thank
and
you.
I think probably for a lot of fans. Thanks a ton. Keep writing.
Thank you.
Mm. That was nice. People remember you from all those years ago,
wow.
Nikki.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is very nice, though. I've been very fortunate in the career. And, you know, it's been a long career. I mean, mm-hmm. I started publishing very early. I was 26. And so I'm 65. So, you know, I've had an opportunity to grow with my poetry and with the people who read it.
Right, yeah. What about fame? What about being this famous poet for all of those years? You have a poem in this book about fame. How do you deal with it?
That I wrote for my football playing. Actually, I wrote it for Michael Vick. I'm only famous when I'm on stage doing something. Otherwise, you know, I go to Kroger's and everybody's like, oh, yeah, I saw you, or, you know, I've been doing NPR. So oh, I heard you yesterday. I heard your poem. And I thank you because, you know, you're not famous like that. I mean, I'm just a writer. So it's not like a movie star or something, you know. Mm-hmm. You just, people are very nice. And my neighbors, I'm living here, my neighbors, I mean, Frank Beamer, you know, they are a lot of high-profile people in Virginia Tech, and so, you know, you just kind of fit in with it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a problem.
And what about football? You like Monday Night Football. You like football, don't you?
I like football. And I wrote about that because I was having an argument with a dear friend. I guess there's probably a better word for him, but we were having an argument. I thought, what the hell with you? I don't need you. I can watch football. So, I do like football. It's a... you know, if I could choreograph, you know, football is a ballet. It's mm-hmm. beautiful, and mm-hmm. it's a dance of inches, mm. and that's why you sometimes, you know, you see somebody miss a tackle. You say, how did that happen? It's a game of inches because you twirl or you keep moving your feet. You know, if you could put music to it, I mean, if somebody were doing that, you could take any good football game, and you know, it'll work.
Right.
Of course, I'm heartbroken because I'm a big Peyton Manning fan, and the Colts are out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was cheering for Donovan, and he's out, and it's like, oh, no. And now the Colts got rid of Tony Dungy, and I think that that's a mistake.
Listen to you. You can really talk football, too.
Well, I'm at a football powerhouse, but, you know, some things make you angry, and Tony Dungy is a class act.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you look at some of these people, they're 90,000 years old, and, you know, you have one bad season, all of a sudden the owners. But I would like... When and he will not, by the way, but when Barack calls me and says, Nikki, what do you think I should be doing? I'm going to say, well, Mr. President, I think we need, of course, a Secretary of Culture. Every other first world nation has a Secretary of Culture.
Mm-hmm.
The United States needs one. And I say, and Mr. President, we need a Secretary of Athletics. We do.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm talking to Wisconsin, and you are the only state, Green Bay is the only city that owns a football team.
Right.
Everybody else, it has private ownership, which is a joke because the people have bought the stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
And then every time they say, we want another stadium and we want to tax you to do that, and people say, well, no, we don't think that we're getting our money's worth there. Then they turn around and say, well, we're going to sell the team. Well, it's not their team.
Right, right.
It, the team belongs to the city. It's the Philadelphia Eagles. It's the Indianapolis Colts. It's the Cincinnati Bengals, you
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of... That has worn, that level of outrageous capitalism has played out.
Mm-hmm.
And we need seasons. I'm a tennis fan. Tennis is starting now. Spring training will be in, what, 3-4 weeks
yes,
now?
Yes, it will.
That's ridiculous. That baseball starts in the snow and ends in the snow.
Right.
It was bad enough that they started playing it at night.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Baseball is a daytime game. And people said, oh, but if we play it in the daytime, people will take off from work. Yeah, and there's a lot less rage at the workplace because you get a break. You get to sneak out and watch a ball game or something. It helps you to relax. I mean, come on.
I like that. My husband is a baseball reporter, so I'll tell him.
Well, you know.
I'll tell him to use that one of his columns, huh?
Oh,
yeah. So if you did have that meeting with the president and he took you up on this, yes, I think it's a great idea to have a Secretary of Culture, and I want you to do that job, Nikki. What would you say?
I would take it.
Would you?
Yeah, because I think that I can do it because the one thing that I think I share with the president, whom I do not know, is a total comfort with who I am. And that means that I would be perfectly willing to make sure that I am engaging the best minds to get this job done.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have an ego that says I want it. I'm a big Nancy Pelosi fan, and Speaker Pelosi teaches us you can get a lot done if you don't have to take credit for it. And so, yeah, I think I would be a good Secretary of Culture
because
I think that we would pull in what needs to be pulled in so that we could look at regional theater, so that we could look at how we fund arts, how we fund opera, how we fund jazz, how we begin to house hip-hop in a classical mode because it has proven itself over the years. It's so important that we have zoos, and it's so important that we encourage zoos to begin to respond, at least in my opinion, and you can cut me off, but to respond to where they are. And everybody can have a lion or a tiger. I mean, that's crazy. So what you want to do is make sure that you are responding to where the National Zoo has, as you know, just done that recent buffalo, the plains thing, and the prairie dog.
Right.
And I think that one of the best small zoos in the nation, of course, is New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it needs help because New Orleans needs help. But, you know, we start to look at that. Kids need to go to the zoo. Kids need to have the petting zoos. They need to be able to understand our relationship with animals. Zoos and museums are so important to that. And every time the country wants to save a penny, they get rid of art. They get rid of the art teacher.
Right.
They get rid of the going to hear and see something. And then we expect the kids to grow up and have sense.
Right.
What kind of sense does that make?
Yep. All right, I'm with you. Campaign for the job. You'd be good. You'd be good. Martha from Madison, hi.
Hi. This isn't what I called about, but I just can't believe that Nikki Giovanni got something to say about baseball. I called to just to say that I'm so happy to hear you on Wisconsin Public Radio. I grew up being taught your poetry and being taught about you and your activism and who you are. And just to thank you so much. You're such an inspiration to me and to so many other people in the world, all over the world, on so many levels, on a personal level, on a national level, on a university level, as a professor, as just standing up for what's right all the time, and on an international level. I mean, even what you're talking about with the possibility of a Ministry of Culture, I just thank you so much for everything.
Mm-hmm.
I work with kids, with adolescent kids a lot, especially at-risk, non-white youth,
mm-hmm.
and mainly a bunch of fast little girls, basically. But one of the things that I always leave them with is a copy of Ego Trippin' to remind them that they are bad, in a good way.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate you and all that you do for us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Oh, good call. 800-486-8655 is the number for you to call to speak with Nikki Giovanni, who's our guest this hour and has a new book of poems. And good ones they are, beautiful ones they are. Bicycles, Love Poems by Nikki Giovanni. Three-time NAACP Image Award winner, first recipient of the Rosa Parks Woman of Courage Award, the Langston Hughes Medal for Outstanding Poetry. She has won, and she's written 27 books and has a Grammy nomination for the Nikki Giovanni Poetry Collection. So we're welcoming phone calls for her. I'll give you the number once again, 800-486-8655. She is the University Distinguished Professor of English at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia. And you'll remember that she wrote a poem on the occasion of the horrible killings at that school and was asked to really lead the university and, by extension, the country and many people who are trying to make sense of the horrendous tragedy. We did so through her thoughts and words. More phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Nikki Giovanni. Her new book is Bicycles, Love Poems, and we're welcoming phone calls for her at 800-486-8655. We also have an email address that you can use, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And as the calls are coming in and being put on hold, let's go to a call, and then I'll ask her about Elizabeth Alexander later. Josie is calling us from Chicago, Nikki. Hi, Josie.
Hi. I just had a quick question. Mm-hmm. I've been writing poetry since about, since I was like 10, 11. Mm-hmm. I'm 25 now, and I do like the open mics and stuff, but I just wonder if you have advice as to where you go when you want to publish or when you want to write seriously.
Well,
like, what audience do you go to so that it can get somewhere?
I think that a huge error is going to be thinking that there is an audience. I think that what you do is you have to create it. And being in Chicago, because you're in one of the great cities, Chicago has a great poetry, community, period, all over, black, brown, yellow, the entire, you've got the Hyde Park Y there, you've got Bronzeville, you've got University of Chicago, and all that encompasses. So finding your way in Chicago, you need to seek, I think that it would benefit you to seek a group to figure out where, because such a big city, too, where you want to be, where you are, find your community. But you said you've been doing open mic and stuff. Now, one of the things young people seem to understand that she's been teasing me about being a little old lady, but I am, and little old ladies don't really understand online publishing. But I know it's there. My students do it, and I know that it's very possible to publish online and to gain a readership from that. I couldn't tell you how to go about it, but I know that people do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Actually, the open mics they do are in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Really?
So, yeah. Oh. It's at this place called The Nook. But my other question was, why does poetry sound so different in your head than it does, like, to read it out loud?
Uh-huh.
It's, like, very hard to do. It seems like I can't get across the meaning verbally, but I feel like it's there, like, when you read it. Does that make any sense?
Well, I think that as a poet, one of the things all of us want to do, and it's something I stress with my students, is you want to capture your voice. Your voice on paper is different from your voice in your head. So you think you've written something, then you read it aloud, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, this didn't sound right because the inflection is doing something, or because these words are clashing. They didn't clash to the eye, but they clashed to the voice. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
my poetry always sounds perky, and, like, it's not.
Then you need to be sure that you're writing what you think you're writing. And that's one of the reasons that I would just urge you to read it aloud.
Okay.
To yourself. Just, stand. Mirrors help. Because you also think you look one way, and as you're reading something or looking in the mirror, you don't look like that. You might think that it's funny, and then you realize you're not smiling, and that changes how it comes across.
Hmm.
Am I making sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I would do that. I said to my students once, and I'll say this to you too, one of the really good exercises in writing, and don't laugh, is just, you need to just sometimes just take all of your clothes off, just strip naked. And I write on the computer, just strip naked and sit down and write, because then you're vulnerable. And that vulnerability will come across in what you're writing in a way when you're heavily clothed not.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's
it's
really
true,
awesome.
Though.
Huh. There's advice you won't hear all the time, right, right, Josie?
Get home and get naked.
Go home and get naked and write poetry.
And write poetry.
There you go.
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. I wanted to ask you, because I was pleased that poetry was a part of the inaugural again this year. And B, I don't think enough has been said, and I've heard different reports from friends of mine when we talked about Elizabeth Alexander's poem, which I really liked, Nikki.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering what you thought about it. I thought she had this you know, American kind of quality to capture the images of farmers and workers. And it had this Carl Sandburg kind of feel to me, which I loved it. Did you like it?
I did very, very, very much. I thought it was a true poem. I mean, it, you know, it wasn't just a, you know, we're opening, you know, the mall, you know, that kind of thing. I thought it was a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good. And I was pleased. You know, Elizabeth is a friend of the Obamas.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that it was a good choice because I think she had a hard job because she had to write a poem. She had enough time to do it that it had to have some meat on it, but you still aren't allowed to overshadow the president. So you're finding, you know, you have to find your own space in there. And when she got to that line, figuring it out at the kitchen table, I just, you know, threw my hand up. So, yeah, okay, she nailed it.
Right.
And I think she did. I thought Praise Song for the Day. And it wasn't a, you know, again, if it had been Praise Song for a New Day, we'd go like, oh, yeah, sure. But she was, she yeah, it was an American poem. I thought it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I really
too.
Did. I liked it a lot.
I
and I was happy. I know Elizabeth. And we read together at the memorial for Gwendolyn Brooks.
Oh.
So I thought it was a good choice. And I was sorry that the Bushes didn't, you know, do at least one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Clinton, of course, had Maya,
mm-hmm.
and so I think it's good. And of course, Bill did that from you know, Jack Kennedy had Bob Frost. So I think it's good. I don't know why the Republicans don't like poetry,
right? Well,
because we haven't had any Republican presidents that. And I know
poetry.
George Bush is not as dumb as people have said, and he's not as ill-read as he likes to pretend. So
mm-hmm.
It would have been good for him to have pulled out a Texan or pulled a Maine, because Maine has great, you know, he has connections, and Connecticut, for that matter. He could have pulled from any number of places, and it would have been a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk about your dog. You still have a dog.
Yeah.
Kennedy,
I love dogs.
I
carry pictures around. He's so pretty. And he really is a beautiful dog. Wendy died. Wendy was the first death in 2005, and
oh.
She was my Karen Terrier. And I think probably all of your reader, your listeners know Karen, Karen's because that's Fala, you know, Franklin Roosevelt's dog.
Uh-huh.
And Dorothy had a Karen Terrier. They're great dogs, but Wendy died of old age. I mean, it was just old age. And I had said, because it's sort of not fair to the dogs, I knew I could never, and I don't think I can ever have another Karen, because I'll invariably say, but Wendy did it this way, or, you know, that
mm-hmm.
Wendy was the dog of my heart, so I just don't think I did, but I ran into this little, I was looking for a dog for a friend of mine, because she wanted to give a dog to her husband, because he was retiring and needed something to do, and I went to it's a little puppy mill, actually, but I went to the kennel, you know, we have a kennel here in Roanoke. And I went, and I'm looking for a boxer, you know, for a big dog. We used to have a boxer when I was a little girl, and boxers are great dogs. They're smart, and they're beautiful, and, you know.
Right.
So I went to see if they had a boxer, and I walked by, and this little guy was under a light. And I said, oh, what's wrong with the little, he's a little Yorkie. I said, what's wrong with the little Yorkie? Oh, he's got lung problems.
Hmm.
And I thought, oh, okay, and I went on, and then I came back, and I said, well, can I see him? He said, well, you know, we're not sure how he's going to make it. I said, well, you know, excuse me? Well, you know, we're not, you know, he's got this cold, and we, you know, we don't want to sell him because you'll bring him back. And so, and I said, whoa. And I could just see what was going to happen to this little guy is that, you know, York is a delicate anyway, and, you know, he doesn't perk up next week, you know, they're just going to what they would call let him go.
Oh.
And so I just pulled out my little credit card. I have a Target card that's Target Visa. I don't know if I should admit that. But I pulled out my little Target Visa, and I said, because her name was Kathy. I said, Kathy, this is my credit card. Now, you can either run it or you can call the cops, but the dog is leaving with me. You know, that was, you know, I wasn't going to leave the little guy there. Oh, he's fitting, he's weighing 3 pounds, you know, 2 pounds, something like that. And I brought him home, and, you know how they shake, you know, they're nervous.
Yes.
And so I had to go get him a couple of sweaters and stuff, and I took him to my vet, and she gave him a tube so that he needed to gain weight, of course, and Marta is my companion animal. And so she told me what to do, and I did, and he started to gain weight. And, of course, he's spoiled now because he was getting protein in a tube, But it's also good, you know, if you cut up a little meat and, you know, they discourage you from feeding dogs human food. But dogs, you know, really do like a piece of bacon every now and then. And so he's gotten to the point now, you know, and he's like, okay, I'm not, you know, that's dog food. I'm not eating that.
I know. I do the same thing.
And they can outweigh you because you start to worry, but it's like, I'm not going to do it. And, you know, and then eventually say, well, a little piece of bacon.
Yeah.
A little egg. Well, he's great. His name is Kennedy.
Kennedy.
Yeah, aww. Because one, he's beautiful, and President Kennedy was, you know, such eye candy. And if I had known, maybe if I had him done now, I'd name him Obama because, you know, I think beautiful males ought to have good names.
You're wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us. I've loved your poetry for many, many years, and this has been great fun. Thank you.
It is. Thank you.
Thanks. Nikki Giovanni, our guest. I'm glad I asked that question. So you always get a good answer when you ask about a dog. The latest book is Bicycles, Love Poems by Nikki Giovanni, which has just been published and is ear candy. It's very nice. She's a poet, activist, mother, and professor. For those of you who are not familiar with her, she's been writing poetry for a long, long time, and it's wonderful to hear her read her poetry as well. She's got a very nice way about her. Thanks to Mimi Notstein for producing this hour, and thanks to Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks, everybody, for your calls. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.